Welcome to the Brute Strength Podcast, bringing you worldwide experts from all areas of health and fitness. We cover training, nutrition, coaching, and mindset. Welcome your host, strength and conditioning coach, 2012 and 2013 CrossFit Games champ, Michael Cashew. Mind, body, brute.
What's up? Welcome back. My name is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week's guest is Hunter McIntyre. Hunter is arguably the best obstacle course racer on the planet, and he is the Floyd Mayweather. He is the Conor McGregor of the obstacle course industry. He loves to shit talk, and we start the show off by talking about our favorite shit talkers in sports. As I started to prepare for this show, it became very apparent to me that Hunter is just a badass human being. And if you've been listening to this show long enough, I don't really ever say that. I talk highly of people, but it is definitely a testament to who he is. He is living life to the fullest. He is challenging himself in every way possible. And I got a ton out of listening to this kid. I say kid, he's a little bit older than me, but you get what I'm saying. We talk about why he puts the medals of his losses up in his room rather than all of his, why he puts all of his failures up in his room rather than his medals. Really interesting. We talk about how he went from rehab to logger to male model to world champion in about a 5-year span and a lot of the big lessons that he learned along the way. On the show, we actually realized that we went to the same exact wilderness therapy program at the same exact time, and we're just part of different groups, so you'll hear some of that bromance go on. We talk about all the ways that he sharpens his mind, like meditating in freezing cold water and a number of other things. We talk about the biggest challenge of his life and a ton more. Like I said, I personally got a ton from this one, and I know you will too. Before we get started, if you haven't done so already, I would love for you to leave me a quick review on iTunes. Just let me know what you think of the show. And if you are interested, we have something new on the website. It is a nice PDF. It's a free download that includes our top 5 most downloaded podcasts and the biggest takeaways from each. So on each of those top 5, there are practical things that you can take away and implement into your life, your training, your nutrition, et cetera, immediately. Enjoy the show.
Hunter, what's up, brother? I'm so excited to do this.
Yeah, man, it's been awesome to kind of get together with you. I think we actually met in the CrossFit Games on top of the Fit Aid booth this year.
So oh, did we?
This is our second date.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time, bro. As I was preparing for this, you really just make me want to run through a brick wall. Like the way that you're living your life in just such a, the way that you challenge yourself, the way that you're constantly striving for excellence in every area of your life is really, really inspiring. And I just feel fired up today and I'm excited to do this.
Well, thank you, man. I think that's kind of the goal of hanging out with me. I would say that when I'm with my friends, like we're constantly always trying to find ways to get more reps, do crazier things, have a little bit of fun. And I definitely drag that into competition, not to like delve into it so quickly, but I would say like I've recognized in my 7 years of competing now, a lot of people have fun outside of competition. And when they get to competition, they just kind of like button up and they get so stressed out. I'm constantly just a ball of fun. So, you know, I'll express that throughout the podcast and teaching people how to do it.
Yeah, that's a good segue, man. I know you love trash talk. So who's your favorite trash talker of all time and why?
If you look right here, I've got a tattoo of Macho Man Randy Savage on my ribs. Okay. So I've always been a huge fan of WWE. You got somebody like Macho Man who is just so brilliant in like being an athlete. Like if you look at any of the research on him, like he was just an astounding athlete all around, but he also had this charisma where he just light up the entire room. And then you got, you know, Nature Boy Ric Flair, And I would just sit there and watch these guys rip into each other. And when we were younger, we were watching action movies, and like, you know, even in Predator, when they give each other the handshake and they're like, you know, you son of a gun, like, you know, they never let anybody have the upper hand. You always had to have constant jabs. So I got three older brothers and my dad, like that's probably the core of the shit talking. And then from there, it kind of trickles downhill, and I picked it up along the road watching action movies.
Hell yeah. My favorite is a super unpopular pick, but it's Chael Sonnen.
Who?
From the UFC.
Oh, no.
Chael Sonnen. He has some of the most like controversial trash talk of all time.
Yeah.
And I know that he's just using it to like hype up the fights. He's an announcer now, but a ton of really controversial shit, and it was so entertaining, man.
You know, honestly, I never was a fan of Conor McGregor, and I just watched the Notorious documentary, and I have to say, like, I completely switched to the other side. Like, I'm obsessed with him now. He had such a brilliant way of orchestrating his future through the way that he talked about it. Like, nobody would give – I mean, there's 1,000 people who could throw a punch and a kick in that right. UFC realm, but the way that he just said it, he walked it, he talked it, he lived it, he looked it, I was like – gosh, I watched that the other day. I went in my closet. I like, threw out half the clothes that I owned. I was like, I'm only wearing ridiculous, nice. Like super fly outfits and talking trash to everybody. Nice.
Isn't it crazy how he earned, I don't know, $50-100 million through that Mayweather fight
thing?
Through his words.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you see him, he walks on stage and he's got that like kind of ridiculous like robe kind of jacket. Yeah. He struts out, throws it off like – he got to have a pair of balls to do that. And he knew he was going to get pummeled. And, you know, he basically put up a little bit of a dog fight to put on a show. And now he's set forever.
Hell yeah.
But unfortunately, in the mud running industry, I can't do that just yet.
Not yet.
No.
It's a young sport, man. So you do something really, really interesting that I wanted to ask you about. You have a ton of different medals from all of your competitions.
Yeah.
And you only hang up the medals of competitions that you've lost. Do you remember the moment when you made the decision to do that? And what was it about?
Gosh. I had a really, really successful upcoming in the way that I won a lot of the races in high school. I won a lot of the races when I started racing professionally. And nothing really kind of jabbed me in the ribs that hard until I lost the 2013 World Championships in Killington for Spartan Race. And I literally like fell apart. And I'll never forget, like, I didn't hang up my medal that time. I hung up the hydration pack that I owned because I didn't put enough water in it and I didn't take enough things. And I was like, you're the idiot who dragged this thing around on your back and didn't have the brains to really set yourself up for success. You just gave it to somebody else. Like, I'll never forget, and I'm not trying to blame him. I had a full water pack that probably weighed like 10 pounds. And my dad's like, this weighs too much. And he started dumping out all the water and took out some of my snacks. He's like, you don't need this much. And I was like, okay, Dad, I guess I'll trust you. My dad doesn't know anything about sports. And it's a 3-hour and 45-minute long race for me. By the end of that thing, I was like, dude, you gave away your win. You basically gave away your win. So right then and there, I started to recognize that I need to kind of start putting up like, you know, things that will haunt me. I need to start looking around the house and see that I can't do like, you know, certain things. I'm not invincible. And then I started to do a television show called Boundless, where I literally got the piss beaten out of me on so many ultra distance races. And I started to like kind of just surround myself with this wall at my desk of things that were like, you know, Hunter, like you have left a lot of, you got some skeletons in the closet you got to go clean out. So this one bike race I out in Chamonix in France, I'm still going to go do. It may not happen really soon, but I have.
Yeah, the mountain bike race, right?
Yeah. Pummeled, dude. Let me tell you, the worst you've ever felt from a CrossFit workout, like just drag that out over 6 hours and then have like cameras filming you the entire time. It was a rough day.
That's interesting, man. So how do you weigh that kind of thinking, like surrounding yourself by the things you don't want to happen again, with the idea of positive thinking and law of attraction and that kind of realm of mindset training or creating a positive mindset?
Well, I put those in my room. I do not put those in my gym. My gym is completely constructed to be a success. I hang all my gold medals in my gym. I right in front of my squat rack and pull-up bar, I have the check from TMX World Championships last year, and I've looked at that thing for hundreds, if not 1,000 hours since right. then. And every time I do a rep, I'll pick a letter on there, like, you know, let's say it says M for McIntyre, the beginning of it, and I'll just start like macho, manly, you know, musky, whatever the heck the word is, like multiple time champion. Every rep, I'll say something different as I go through it. And like, that is the only way I'll design my workouts. But once I leave the gym, I allow myself to come out of that mindset of being like a champion in every second, every rep. And then I allow myself to be humbled a little bit by some of the things I have in my room. And like on my diet journal and things like that, like I'll write anti-fat book, like I'll write things that are constantly reminding me, like, you know, Hunter, you're not at your goals yet. And so in the gym,
that's the kind of stuff, man. That's the kind of stuff I was talking about. That fires me up. I love it. Where did that come from? Is that something that you learned or you just started doing?
Well, I will say, like, I had a really sloppy start. Like, I would come in and just like pummel kids. Like in my senior year, I was undefeated in wrestling, and then I got suspended so many times they wouldn't let me wrestle anymore. And then all of a sudden, like, I come back from being suspended and I lose my last match because like I would like cut. I was swearing at the ref because he was calling bad points. Like, I had like a really tattered like record coming up. Like, I was just sloppy with it. And then in 2013 or no, yeah, I think 2013, January, first week of January, second week of January, I had like a big party night in Miami, and I basically overdosed on cocaine. And not to be dramatic, but that's just like, I had to make this decision. A week later, I had the first championship race of the year, mm-hmm. and I'm running against these two guys who are, you know, national champion trail runners. They're, you know, they had won the world titles the year before. And I'm running against these guys and my heart's tearing at the seams because like I just felt like the overload of the stress on my body. It wasn't anxiety. It was just my body could not keep up with these guys. And I had to make this decision. I was like, dude, like, are you going to be the guy who always has to like make up for what you did last weekend? Are you going to be the guy who just kicks the crap out of everybody because no one can deal with the workouts you put down, the trash talk you lay into them, the mindset that you bring every single time? Like, the way I tie my shoelaces is I tie them to win. I tie them this way and then I reverse tie them so they can't come untied. Nobody ties their shoelaces like that. Only a champion does.
Yeah.
So like, I started to make these decisions like right then and there. I was like, dude, you're giving people these wins. It's either you take them back or you sit there and allow them to hold on to them until you got the balls to get them. And I had to make that choice. Like, and everything before that was like, I liked winning. Now I'm obsessed with winning. And I had to make that decision where it's like literally a light switch. There's no such thing as like the lights are half on. There isn't a dimmer on my light switch. It's either all on or all off.
I respect so, that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I'll admit, my off seasons are pretty hardcore. Like, I still go out and I'll drink my beers and I'll dance up and down, but in season, nothing.
Right. Yeah, I not to go off on too much of a tangent, but I thought that was really interesting. So you're in season, you are so dialed in. Does any part of you think that if your off season was a little more dialed in, like some of the guys like Tom Brady and LeBron James, where they're putting everything under the microscope, that you might be more successful?
I don't know the best way to put this, but I think if you do not have, like, you know how a snake sheds its skin?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you just stay in that shell all the time, I think you become brittle. I don't think you grow as a person. And I need this off season where I won't eat any proper nutrition. I won't follow any designed training logs. And it allows me to, it's like a stretching of a rubber band. Like, right. You know, I'm allowing myself to not like stay in position. And if you leave a rubber band in position for too long, it will actually grow brittle. But like, you know, in my mind, like, I'm allowing myself to like really open up my mind and relax my body. And then I come back with this incredible energy of like,
yeah.
Hunter, like, you got like that hangover you had a couple of weeks ago. Like, you can't ever do that again, man. It's go time. And like, I use those stepping stones or those relay points where I'm like, do you remember that night?
Right.
Like, that ain't happening anymore, man. You had your couple nights and now it's time to go back to it. And I obsess over it. Like, yeah. I miss the parties. I miss going out, chatting to girls, getting in a little bit of a Russell tussle, whatever it might be. But, you know, in season, it's pretty exciting to have that kind of that reserve. And I definitely look forward to, like, you know, end of October when I start the off season again.
Yeah. I mean, it's classic yin and yang, right? You can't be yang all the time or else your yang becomes 80%, 60%. So yeah, I love that level of rejuvenation that you have.
One thing I'll mention though is, like, I also think that people who get so into that, like, year round thing are some of the more, like, breakable people. They get super, super anxious if they miss their workouts. They get super, like, they hold on to things too tightly. And that may not work for everybody who's listening to this interview, but I allow that to, like, let me realize that it doesn't mean everything. You know what I mean?
That definitely resonates. I would agree with that, actually. Even the two guys that I mentioned seem, from someone who's watching ESPN, they seem like that type of person, right? If they're thrown off in any way, that they will be derailed. But they're in kind of a position where they can control their environment nearly 100% of the time. And they're just really in the minority of people.
Dude, I wish I had that Tom Brady money so yeah, I could exactly. have like 15 coaches, 15 nannies to watch my kids.
Exactly.
Yeah, it will come someday.
So I want to backtrack a little bit and dive into some of your story. As a kid, you had ADD, as so many kids do. I think I definitely had at least a mild form of ADD.
Yeah.
And I know that you were medicated and it was a big challenge for you. And so my question to you is, knowing what you know now, if you were to have a kid, which I'm sure you will have a kid with ADD, how do you think you would deal with a kid like that? Would you medicate him? What would you do?
I wouldn't say this is a sensitive subject for me, but I'm certainly, like, I get revved up when I talk about this stuff because, like, from a young age, man, like 7 years old, these guys were starting to crank me full of pills like Ritalin, Adderall. I don't even know the one that I had to be on forever, but like
now they have Vyvanse.
Vyvanse, Dexedrine was the one that I was on. Yeah. Dude, like if you put that on the table, it will melt a hole through it. Like it, this stuff was so powerful, right. And they had me as a little kid taking this stuff, and I was like, dude, like to think about taking a child who has a lot of energy and putting him in a room full of his best friends for a handful of hours, and you go right out of bed straight into school. So you go from a box to a box. I've thought about homeschooling my kids for the start, you know, at least until like they're the age of 10, because like one, I'm able to really get my hands on them and help teach them about the ways of the world, really give them as many tools as possible for when the world starts to really get serious. And I can't teach them about algebra and calculus and science.
Put a plow in his hand and just let him till up the backyard.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the world is all about these, you know, squares into square holes, round pegs into round holes. And I think the system isn't designed, and I know it's not fully prepared for people like myself or a kid who's got, you know, some kind of mental disability. It's hard for them, and we don't have the financing to really take care of these guys. But I would say, like, you know, I look forward very much so to ending my career and lending myself to helping people who are going through that transition in their young years and understanding how to deal with like the energy or the anxiety or the craziness that comes with just being like a rambunctious kid. So, you know, I really do look forward to having children. I really do look forward to being able to put my sword down from battle, which is my sport, and eventually coming back and being able to give some wise words now that I've been on the other side and I've graduated and I don't take any of these medications. I've just learned how to handle myself around people, and I've learned how to tunnel, like, you know, pinpoint my energy with my workouts, my meals, my rest, my whatever, my off time. So it's a tough conversation and it's a lot to say, but I appreciate you asking.
Yeah, that's an excellent answer, honestly, and it is kind of enlightening to me. I think that's a phenomenal way to go about it. And homeschooling your children is more accessible than ever. I think there are like elementary schools that are like $10 a month to get the curriculum and to teach it yourself. Yeah. I can't remember what they're called off the top of my head, but I know they're very affordable compared to regular school. And the current school system is made for rule followers. And I think every day that goes by, there are fewer of those because information is being spread so rapidly and so widely that everyone is starting to wake up to this broken system. Yeah. Right? So parents are going to be whether they're intending to or not, they're teaching their kids not to follow the rules, right? To think for themselves, to be creative. And it just doesn't fit in our current education system. So I really love that answer.
Well, my brother, hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. my nephew's 6 years old and he can't read at the rate the other kids do. You hang out with him, he's a totally normal kid. Mm-hmm. Tons of fun, totally aware, great conversationist, like, you know, has it all. He's a 6 year old kid. Now all of a sudden I put him in a room and I tell him he has to read and he doesn't really want to do it and he's not going at the rate everybody else is. They're looking to put him into other schools because they think that he might have some kind of learning disability. When I look at that, like, I'm trying not to be a jerk brother and be like, guys, chill out. But I say to myself, I'm like, you're looking at a 6 year old man. If he can't read at 10, 12, 13, yeah, sure, put him in a special school. But, you know, right now you're looking at a kid who wants to climb trees, pick his nose, push girls, whatever the heck it might be. I just think that I think there's a lot of opportunity. And I think, you know, the school system, because of the way like people might paint a picture about your child, even though you're not there watching your child interact with these school lessons, might really freak you out. Because I think my parents never really got to see the way I act in school, but the teachers are telling him, like, your son's running around and, you know, picking up rocks and eating bugs and stuff. He must be crazy. And, you know, I hope that people hear this. If you guys got kids, recognize that, you know, a little bit of energy in the front end does not mean that he's going to be crazy on the back end.
Right. So as I was preparing for this, I realized that you and I have almost identical upbringings, man. Like, come from great families. We were very into sports. And then we both fell into drugs. And I think we both chose them for similar reasons, in that we weren't feeling really challenged and we just wanted like exciting experiences. At least that's how it started for me before it became like an addiction. So looking back on that period of your life, what kind of environment do you think you would have had to be in for that not to happen? Does that exist?
That's tough, because I try to think, like, when people ask me, they're like, Hunter, like, you know, I'm struggling with drugs. Like, what do I do? Like, how'd you break free of it? And I think the world, the way it is now, it's like, especially with your cell phones, like, I feel terrible for people now. Like, you know, you can look at your phone and Google any of this stuff and see all the cool videos of people tripping out, getting high, dancing at clubs and stuff. You're like, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And like, that's really tough. You know, I think for me, they were trying to put me in military school. I don't know if that would have been better, but I refused to go. I went for a little while and I ended up getting a lot of trouble, so I got out. But the reality is, I think if I went back and I had to talk to myself, I think it's very important for people to have resources rather than kind of like ramifications for bad actions.
Resources, meaning, not ramifications. That's a quote right there.
Yeah. I just made that up. So if you take it up, you can keep it. But the reality is, it's like every time I got in trouble, nobody explained to me why I was getting in trouble and how I could maybe change it and grow through this position. They'd put me in a room and quiet me down for hours at a time, like suspension or in-school suspension or, you know, expulsion or whatever the heck it might have been. I just kept on getting cracked on with a whip. And like, that's not necessarily the way to really reinforce like structure and helpful, like, you know, decisions for these kids. So like, I had to go to rehab, and I'll never forget, they put me, I was in the Second Nature Entrada thing out in the
woods. No, which one?
In Utah.
Wait, Entrada. Dude, I was group 5, Second Nature Entrada. I swear to God. That's hilarious.
I can't remember what group I was in, but I was in there the first 7 weeks I was there. They had me out of the group for 24 days, 24 freaking days.
I love it.
And they thought to themselves, like, hey, Hunter, like, you have to understand that you're in trouble. And as you can see that you can't control yourself in society, AKA the group. Now we have to take you away. I'm like, you guys think that you're going to put me in the woods with a nice campfire all by myself and that this is going to break my spirits? And like, it was so ass backwards. Like, they thought solitary confinement was the way to reinforce positive thinking. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and I remember I had to go on solos where I'd have to sit with instructors and the instructors weren't allowed to talk to me. We'd be there for 8 to 10 hours of sunlight and then I had to go to bed and I would just have these two sitting right there quietly and I'm sitting right here. I'm like, how is this like constructively spending the money of your guys' time and also trying to teach me? My parents are spending a boatload too. And we're just sitting here in silence. Like, this is ridiculous.
Right. $500 a day.
Yeah. Just so I don't even know how we got to this point, but I just think if I could go back, I wish I had those resources. And I really, as I said, once again, I would like to help show those things to the younger populations as I have the time.
Yeah, I think I know the sound and the theory of some of these new types of schools where they ask you what you're interested in and they help you cultivate and learn about different things that you're genuinely interested in sounds like the closest thing to what would have helped me, right? It was all constrained into what was available at my school in my tiny town, right? So I did things because that was what everyone did, but not because that's what I was necessarily most interested in.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. Like, you know, I one big thing I think that would have given me a lot of I developed very late as an athlete because I had coaches who were not giving me like tools for success. They were like, Hunter, just go out in the woods and run. I just like, you know, I think now one of the greatest things that has given me a big leg up in my growth as a person has been my love for knowledge and reading. You reached out to me and said to me before, now I will read books. Anytime I'm struggling to really wrap my head around something, like right now I'm reading about the death of Lincoln. I'm reading at the same time a book about Napoleon because I want to understand how somebody could overcome and do so much. I'm 29. Like by my age, he'd already taken over multiple countries. He'd taken over almost Europe. And I was like, how the heck is he doing it at this rate of speed when I'm complaining about my workouts, cooking my meals, and trying to write a couple emails?
Right.
So these kind of things, you know, I don't know if there was a way to give back and like, you know, show the youth that kind of stuff. But if I can imagine for someone like you in a town with not very much, with not many answers, if you had found a way to really absorb yourself into knowledge of books and things like that, it would have just laid down the bricks on the road in front of you.
Right. I totally agree. But it would have had to be on my own accord, not because someone's saying you have to read this book.
No, totally. Totally. So it takes time.
Yeah. So you go through rehab and then you get a logging job as per the court order. And then you become a male model for some big companies like Abercrombie and Fitch. What inspired this and how did it come about?
Oh man, this is a goofy story. I was currently at college to wrestle and I was currently on academic probation, so I couldn't wrestle. So I would just work out all day long. Just getting shredded. And I was at a party at my house and girls there, everyone's partying. I pop out of my bedroom, my underwear. I'm like, woohoo! And this dude looks at me. He's like, damn, dude, you should be a model. And I was like, heck yeah, I should be a model. And he's like, no, I model. I'll get you in contact with the right people. And I was 19 years old and I didn't think twice about it. And I knew that my trajectory of college was like basically like a rocket ship that had run out of fuel and was coming straight back down towards the earth. So basically I was like, I guess I'll just try this out for right now because it's better than sitting around and trying to be like a bartender or a barback at like some greasy Irish bar in Rhode Island. So, I basically just started chasing it as hard as I could. And I did it the same exact way I did sport. I was like, I don't know how to model, so I'm just going to work out as hard as I can and get as shredded as I can. Hopefully that will look good on pictures. And that's how it started. I immediately moved down to Miami and I'm still working with the same agency that I've worked with for the past 10 years. I don't do it much anymore. Then all of a sudden I started working in New York a little bit and then all of a sudden they flew me over to Spain and I started working over in Spain and lived there for a handful of months.
Model. Nice.
Yeah, I don't think I'm the prettiest guy on earth, but I just played my cards right. So
rugged. Rugged. Yeah,
that rugged, handsome man. And you know what? Like, it was a very weird thing for me because I only knew how to play into it like a sport, and it's much more of a political game where you have to know the right people. You have to really walk the walk and talk the talk. You might be the most handsome man in the room, but you will not win it over if you don't know the casting director, if you don't know, you know, you haven't worked with a photographer before. And that for me really just like became this thing where I was like, dude, like I hate this. And all I'm doing is working out to look good. And I have this competitive spirit. So like eventually I was just like, I'm chucking this in the trash and I'm going to sport. And like I, at the same time, was trying to figure out if I could get into the Navy. Like my number one dream was to be a Navy SEAL growing up. And after all of my legal troubles while I was modeling, I was like signing up for the Navy. I got sworn in. I was in for 2 days. They boot me out. And I think I might have wrote that in your guys' questionnaire. Like what was like a catalyst like moment for me? That was it. Like I immediately found out that like my lifelong dream, or at least for as long as I cared about things, was in the dust. Like it just was, it had no roots. And I decided from that point on, I was like, if I can't be a Navy SEAL, I'm going to be the fittest, most badass dude on the face of the earth. And everyone will regret not having me on their team. And nice. Like that's what shot me into the direction that I'm in now.
That's badass, yeah. Man. Yeah, I have a really close friend that I went through treatment with that was in a similar situation. He applied for a lot of the three letter organizations in the country, yeah. And he was shot down over and over and over, all because of something that happened 10 years ago. And now he's finally in one of those organizations after many years of trying, but it was very difficult.
I admire him, dude, because I tried 5 times.
Yeah.
2-time Navy, 2-time Marines, 1-time Army, and they just wouldn't have it.
Damn.
I'll admit, like, I did something stupid. I pulled a fire alarm during, like, one of the SATs at school, and another one was a senior prank gone wrong. And both of them, like, literally harmless. Like, if I told you the full stories, we didn't need to get into it here. You'd be like, that's a really funny senior prank. But the courtroom's like, no.
Oh, man. No sense of humor.
I was like, come on, you can't laugh at that. Damn. So that's where I'm at.
So then you found OCR, or went to OCR, obstacle course racing. And yeah. I think that was 2013, yeah?
2012 was like when I was like, all right, it's go time. 2013 is when I went professional.
Got it. And then this past year, 2017, you became the world champion in obstacle course racing.
Yeah, I'll admit right now, just to clarify things, there are multiple organizations, but I won 2 world titles with Tough Mudder last year, so that was exciting. Okay. Still haven't won Spartan Race, and still haven't won OCR World Championships.
Okay, we're calling you the best obstacle course racer in the world, just FYI.
Heck yeah.
So one thing that I tell participants at our athlete camps all the time is something out of a Stephen Pressfield book called Turning Pro, and it's one of the main tenets is that amateurs have amateur habits, professionals have professional habits. And one of the biggest things about professionals is that they choose to cultivate and have professional habits long before they're technically a professional. And really, one way to look at it is what makes them a professional is just having these habits, right? They don't have to have the sponsorships or the money or the classification, but acting in a way that is professional means that they are professional. How does that resonate with your experience?
Well, I'm just an all-in kind of guy. And when I found out that this was like my next path, like I just went all in. I did all the research. I read all the books. I would email every person that I could get a hold of their contacts, whether it be the best triathlete, the best weightlifting coach, I contact Brian McKenzie because I grew obsessed with CrossFit endurance. Like, you know, I just was so obsessed with finding knowledge. I was eating everything in front of me, you know? And, I noticed this because like, and a lot of people don't have it. And I tell a lot of people like, you know, not to be crude, I'm like, you're just being a pussy. Like I end up doing these training camps with these guys and they're like, Hunter, like, how do you end up like putting this together? Like, what am I missing? And I'm like, I'm just watching you, man. And I'm just seeing that you're not in it. Like you say you want it, but you're not really in it. And I think a lot of people will say like, you know, I would love to be on the Patriots. I'd just crush. Yeah. I'm like, you put that helmet on, you put those pads on, you get hit a couple times, I guarantee all your dreams will just be up in smoke.
Right. Give me a specific example of what it looks like when someone's not really in it. What do you really mean?
I'll give you an example right now. My roommate, he's an awesome kid. He is a really talented person, but he hasn't had the professional level of success that he deserves if he puts the work in. And he's like, Hunter, like, you know, I'm really training hard. I'm really eating right and everything. And then he moves in with me and I'm like, dude, I'm watching what you eat. I'm watching the way you train and everything like that. Like when we go, we have a prescribed workout, he would grab the smaller dumbbells instead of the ones that we have prescribed. And I was like, when we get into contests, it's not going to be lighter. Just because you want to do it at a certain speed doesn't mean that all of a sudden when we get to contest that the bags are going to be the weight that you choose. So I said, go pick up the right dumbbells. And I'm not trying to be rude by any means, but I'm letting him know that's like every single time you do something, it has to be done with the drive and the direction that the first place person has.
Right.
Because go ahead. No, I'm just saying, like, because the people that I've known who are absolute champions literally do things with such a science, even though they may not consider it to be a science, like they not, may not be as measured as I am and everything. Like you watch them do it and it's with an exact focus that they know that if they can do one thing within a certain rep or a certain second, that they cannot be beaten. And that's one of my greatest competitors, this guy, Hobie Call. He said, if I do these three workouts and I hit these numbers, I won't be beaten. And I'm like, that's incredible to know that you have that much confidence in what you do. And I don't have that. There's no set workout that I have right now that I'm like, if I can do these three things, no one can touch me. And I immediately, when I found that out, wrote down a handful of things. Like I need to be able to front squat 315 two times. I needed to be able to run like a 9:45 2 mile and row 2K, like 6 minute 2K. I still haven't hit those numbers. I've hit one of them or two of them. But like together, I want to be able to do them all week. I was like, if I could do that, I'm unbeatable. Right. And I still haven't even hit my marks.
What are some of the other things outside of training and nutrition that make up what you would call, like make, define you as a professional?
Well, one, every single time I introduce myself, I let people know that I'm a professional. I think a lot of people struggle to understand what our sport is. And I was one of the first people in the sport who'd be like, yeah, I'm a world champion and I run this professionally. I do this professionally. And not as a bragging right, but because I wanted to take myself more seriously. And if I didn't say that out loud, who the heck else is going to say it for me? You know? So then all of a sudden, as I start to tell people like, yeah, I won the world title in this, and yeah, like I've got this, that, and the other thing under my belt. Like when people are sitting next to me on the plane, they're like, hey, what are you flying here for? I'm like, well, I'm going to run the world title for this, or I'm competing in this. They're like, I've never heard of that. I'm like, yeah, it's a really big deal. It's on ESPN, CBS, NBC. I need to say that to reaffirm my beliefs in what I'm doing. And I know that may come across as like, you know, why are you telling me these things? Like, because I need to convince myself.
Right.
And I need to wake up getting out of bed every single day, where like a lot of people will be like, oh, Hunter, you're just going to go to the gym for a couple hours today. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to the gym a couple hours today because everybody else in the world wants to take what I'm doing and beat me at it. Yep. You go to a job where you basically have to fill out emails and maybe have to sit down in like a finance meeting to just to rebudget your next quarter. Even though I'm sure that's a tough job, like people aren't trying to kick you out of your chair and fire you because they're doing a better job than you today. That's what they're trying to do for me.
Right.
So like I always put a lot of emphasis behind what I do so that I get jacked up about it. Like I'm like, yes, yes, you are professional. You are going to be number one. This workout is the number one workout because if you do it, no one else can do it at the pace that you can and at the weight that you can and keep on waking up the next day and doing it again.
First off, you just said doo-doo. Next.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah, this I don't take what you're saying lightly at all. The power of language is incredibly powerful because it shapes our beliefs, and our beliefs shape our entire lives, right? They create the constraints of what we think we're capable of and the actions that we take. So whether it be your affirmations or just the way that you talk to others about yourself is super powerful. And I hope everyone really hears that. A resource for anyone listening, if you're interested in getting a higher powered language, is look up Procabulary. Mark England is fascinating, and it's a really, really simple course that can change your entire life. Procabulary.com. Yeah. Really good.
I met that guy. He's a lot of fun.
Yep.
Yeah. Just to go back to it, like at first, and I hope my mom doesn't listen to this. At first, my mom didn't really believe in my journey. Mm-hmm. She wanted me to go back to college. My dad and my brother gave me money to go to a couple events. And my mom kept on being like, Hunter, when are you going to stop this stuff and go back to college? And, you know, that may not that may not really kind of sink in with you guys, but that crushed me. Like, my mom did not believe in me enough that she thought that what I was doing was serious. Cause my brothers, you know, they're neurologists, they're lawyers, they're hedge fund guys. Like, yeah, they do great things, but what I was doing was great too. And my mom's like, go back to college so you can get a real job. And I had to keep on telling myself, I was like, Mom, I'm going to be the best in the world and you're going to see it and you're going to really appreciate it. And, you know, I had to keep on convincing myself of that. So if you guys ever have somebody who doesn't believe in the workouts that you're doing to get prepped for the open or the amount of time that you're dedicating to weigh in your food and stuff like that, and your friends are teasing you, who gives a damn? Like, believe in what you're doing so that when you really get to where you want to be, like, everybody else will see that. And whether they're appreciative and support you or they're jealous, let them own that and own what you did that entire time to get there.
Boom. Man, yeah. I had the same exact experience starting this online company, right? It's a new generation, and my parents did not understand that this was even a possibility. I used that shit as fuel, man. It fired me up so much to know that people didn't think I could do it. I'm almost always more successful when I have some people really doubting me. It fires me up, fuels me.
I love it.
So I know one of the things that you believe, you already started to talk about this, is that you think people are soft, and I couldn't agree more. One of the problems I think is that people don't really see the benefit in toughening up and being tougher these days because we don't necessarily need to be tougher. What are some of the benefits of being a tougher person?
Well, you know, Mark Ribbitow, that quote that he said, the stronger you are, the harder you are to kill.
Yep.
I think that trickles down, like, from the point where I'm trying to stab a knife in your chest all the way down to, like, getting there and doing that email that's, like, the last thing you got to get done for the day. And in reality, like, sure, like, we're not wearing suits and armors and swinging battle axes anymore. There's not really that level of toughness that needs to be there. But I think that, like, having that kind of, like, backbone that kind of holds you up throughout the day is, like, really important. And I think one thing I tell people a lot is after you leave, like, high school and college, there's nothing that's grading you as a person and letting you know how you're performing. You basically kind of are floating through life. A lot of people get to do their jobs and they're just doing some really basic stuff and they're getting their paychecks every day. The gym is real and it's raw and it's obvious. Like, if you're going into the gym and your weight's not going down on the scale, plates aren't going on to the bar every single session, like, it doesn't have to be every session, but if you're not growing in the gym, then it will show right then and there that you're not putting the work in to really take advantage of your life. And I tell people that all the time. I'm like, if you're not going to the gym, like, how do you even know if you're improving as a person? And there's tons of other things in the world that can improve you as a person, but I think that's, like, that right there is my center. Every single time I go into the gym or I go out to the track, like, I know that I'm improving, and, like, it's very important for me to have that. And it shows, like, if I hit a big PR, I could literally go up to any girl in the bar and say, what's up? And if I hit a big PR, like, if I in an interview like this and, like, just having, like, crappy workouts, like, I would have felt pretty defeated sitting here in front of you. I'll admit, like, I haven't announced it publicly. As some people know, I tore a ligament in my ankle at the last race, and it's before a world title. And I don't tell people that because immediately when I start to say it, then it becomes more real. I had to hold that stuff in and really focus on it. And I lived with it for the past 10 days and it was crushing me because the doctors told me that I needed to be in a boot for the next 4 to 6 weeks. People were telling me, like, I was out. And I just met with a specialist yesterday and he gave me, like, the thing. He's like, Hunter, you're going to be okay. I literally have been floating, like, 10 feet above the ground for the past 24 hours. Hell, and I'm like, yes. And that confidence that sits in my body goes into every other facet of life. And I'm hoping the people who listen to this podcast are fascinated by fitness because it is a fitness podcast. And, like, it really is an energizing feeling to have that strength in the gym, to have that strength outside of the gym in the rest of your life.
So being tough is really – it's not a physical thing, right? It's all happening inside of either your brain, or some people say your gut. It's happening in your wherever the thinking is happening, right?
Yeah.
And you, so it's in your mind. You have some really epic ways of training your mind, like meditating in freezing cold water. So yeah. Tell me about that one specifically and any other things that you found really beneficial.
Dude, for a while, and people laughed at me, I used to do what was called kettlebell meditation, where I would hold a kettlebell in certain positions and I would just, and it wouldn't be long, but I would try to find that center, like that peace, that quiet, that like, I'm not feeling the pain, I'm not feeling the kettlebell or anything, and I'm in my moment. And that was like one of the more impressive tools that I've used in centering my mind, because you know, when you're in like a workout, you're in the open, like I remember in 18.1, I'm rowing and I was just like thinking, I was like, wonder what I'm going to do tomorrow. And all of a sudden I'm like, wait a second, I'm in the middle of a workout, like get your shit together, dude.
Right, right.
And like I started to do things that would, that were more challenging than just sitting in a couch and like closing my eyes and trying to find like, you know, that, that all of a sudden like that inner silence. And like I always am trying to find ways of just like kind of upping the ante a little bit of finding that mental streamline, because I think with technology, distractions of family, finance, whatever the heck it might be, it grows harder and harder to like actually focus on the thing that's at task. So I try to create as many bells and whistles attached to me to distract me from that moment right there. And it really has helped hone me in, at least for my workouts.
That's awesome, man. I love the kettlebell analogy. And I really respect how much you experiment with yourself. That's a really cool characteristic. And really, at the end of the day, there's no one method that's going to work for everyone in the world. You just have to find what works for you. And sometimes it's just like a matter of preference. And so you're just constantly looking for like what is the best thing for you. And I really encourage anybody listening to do the same, whether it's your nutrition or your mindset or your training, figure out what works best for you. Take in all the knowledge you can, but at the end of the day, you have to make your own decisions.
Yeah. One thing I'll say is I've hired a coach almost every single, a new coach every single season. That's been a really big thing for me in learning their mentality, learning their approach to getting it done. That's been something that I'll mention to people can be helpful. And whether it be your coach of like, you know, in the gym or be a coach in life, having mentors. Like I always am trying to find new people to give me like a subject, like really just highlight my, like, you know, a subject in my life that I am missing out on.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a quote I heard you say somewhere. It was success was on the dinner table. And you were talking about like growing up. You said in your family, there was this concept that success was on the dinner table. And if you didn't put your fork in it first, then someone else will. Tell me the story behind this.
I would say probably the dinner table just became such a big thing for the family because my dad was like a dominant human being around food and three older brothers and being the little guy.
So it was specifically about food?
It was about food and it ended up becoming something that like, you know, just, I guess it just came throughout my life. I don't know the specifics of what you're saying, but if I could relate to at least what I'm thinking back to, my whole family always was working at a rate of speed that I had to catch up to. And I think that may be what you're kind of trying to lean yourself towards. I always had to, my brothers were smarter than me. They were bigger than me. They were faster than me. My dad was like a Harvard graduate and was running these big businesses. And to be able to have a minute of their time, like you had to really work for it. And to gain the respect was an even more important thing. And I had these guys kind of just, everything was kind of just compiling and compounding intensity every single day because I just was not ever going to catch up to them. Now that I'm bigger than them and now that I can sit at the table with them, it's one thing. But if I could lend myself to that question and what you're asking, I would say the most important thing for me in that regard would be that I'm always hungry to be the first person on an opportunity when it's there. Meaning that if there is some kind of new business venture coming out in my sport, even if I don't want to be involved in it, I make sure I call that person. I talk to him about it just so I can learn about it. Mm-hmm. And whether or not like I reached out to you before I even wanted to do this podcast, just because I wanted to talk to you a little bit and see if there was anything that we could sync together. And it wasn't even about being in the podcast. Like I was just fascinated about what you were learning. And you have to be the person who reach out. You can't wait for you to contact me. Right. I really wanted to be on this podcast for a long time because I was like, I just think that you're creating incredible messages for people. But I think a lot of people, yeah, I think a lot of people sit back and they allow things to happen to them. And I'm doing it in reverse. I'm making sure it happens to me.
It's badass, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's this, entrepreneurism is a really good example because there's really no roadmap for how to be an entrepreneur because by definition, you're creating something new, right? You're creating something. And so you have to learn to go first or go without all of the, you know, quote unquote, necessary knowledge. And one of the biggest realizations I've had as an adult is I thought all of these older people, they just had it all figured out, right? They knew exactly what to do next. They knew what the meaning of life was and like they knew what they were up to. And as scary as it is, I've learned that no one has it all figured out. And at the end of the day, you have to go for like as a leader, as someone that wants to take or make big opportunities, you have to go first. No one's ever going to just knock on your door, consecutively. You have to take risks.
I got a question for you. Did you know, and I'm always fascinated, like my last girlfriend, I asked her this because she was an Olympic swimmer. And I was like, how did you know what the heck you were going to do once competition was done? Because I know you had a back problem, right?
Yes.
Did you know that you were going to start this or were you just working out as hard as you can, waiting for the day that all of a sudden something would just pop up in your head?
So this company happened by accident. So we competed in 2013 and won the games for the second time. I knew I was done competing because my back was like, I couldn't feel below my knees in the mornings. And so I knew I just had to be done with that chapter. And I had become a coach. I was coaching at LSU, working with future NFL and MLB players. It was very exciting. And as a favor to my current business partner, I teamed up with them to coach some people online, right? Like doing very similar stuff to what we still do. And at first I wanted nothing to do with it. I thought it was kind of silly. I didn't think anyone would, think it was cool or buy it. And once I realized the impact that it could have, we could impact thousands of people rather than just 100 football players and the type of impact we could have, it just changed my perspective on what it means to be a business owner and an entrepreneur. And so, yeah, I had no idea what I was going to do. And I actually struggled when I had my surgery. I really struggled with losing this identity of I am an athlete and that's what makes me cool and that's why people like me. And now I told myself that I am no longer an athlete. And I really struggled with like, how am I valuable now? What do people like me for? And so it was a hard time for me, but I quickly got created some answers for myself and found some peace with it and really dove into a new chapter.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for asking.
It's that life after death thing, man.
Yep.
I'm always fascinated about it. And I always want to be inspired by people such as yourself because it is a very challenging thing when your entire day is, is resolves around the fact that you ran the last race or competed in the last competition really, really well. Or if you didn't do so well, you're going to train really hard to get to the next one. Mm-hmm. And I'm always wondering, like when I put that, put the sword down, like, what does that look like? Like it's a terrifying feeling.
Yeah. I think just change in general is uncomfortable. So I don't know if anyone retires without any sort of like pain or suffering, right? Mm-hmm. But as long as you have something to channel all of that energy into, I think that's just how life evolves, right? We're constantly changing and doing something different if we're really engaged with our lives. That's just how it goes. Yeah.
Congratulations, man. You found it.
Appreciate it, man. What has been the biggest challenge of your life or just one of the biggest challenges that you kind of compare everything else to?
I don't think I've really run into it yet, to be honest. I would say the challenge, that Navy SEAL thing was a really big challenge because it was not Kokoro. Okay. The fact that I could not be a Navy SEAL was a very, very challenging thing for me to understand that there are certain things in the world that you're not allowed to do if you misbehave. And I had never had that really sink in. Mm-hmm. I had been arrested many times and I had really gone through some stupid things, but I always kind of got out of it. And it took me so long to understand that there are real rules in this world. Like, obviously I'm not dancing around, like, you know, that crazy life of being a sociopath or a serial killer, but there are certain things, like if you misbehave, you screw up, man, like you're certain things that are going to be off the page for the rest of your life. And that was a very challenging thing for me to accept. And I had to completely change my life from that point forward. I haven't been in a fist fight since 2012, January 1st.
And that was sobriety date.
That basically
sobriety date.
My fist fight sobriety date. And it was a pretty amazing moment where I had to like really change my life. I used to be a totally different person before that. And you know, not at the core, like I'm still Hunter, but like the things that like really got me off and got crazy, like I had to change that. And whether it's like for you, when you had to go through sobriety, you had to like completely change your friends, you had to completely change your motor patterns, your hangout spots and things like that. It was a pretty amazing thing where like I went home for my high school reunion and it was really great to see people after 10 years, but we went to the bars and we were partying and then this huge street fight broke out. And usually I used to be the kid who used to jump in, like not even if I knew anybody, and just be like, whap, I don't know who you are, but I'm going to rack you on the, right on the chin. Gosh, man, like I called my brother right then and there. I was like, can you pick me up, man? Things are getting a little crazy right now and I want to go home. And like, I was like, who the heck are you? Like all my friends are like, Hunter, you don't want to hang out, dude. Just pop it off.
Yeah.
And like, I still get to see that. Like I can see like my shadow, like stretched way back there of like who I used to be. And, sometimes I get a little bit sad about that. Like, you know, there was a really fun part about that person, but, I really love who I am now and I appreciate what I've built with the person that I am now. But I'm sure that you feel that every once in a while when you see those people doing some wild and crazy things, you're like, that's not me anymore. But you have that, you can almost taste it in the back of your mouth, that kind of like the flavor of the party back in the day. You're like,
right.
Oh, we had some good times.
Yeah. But the sacrifices are worth it 100% because I realized that I just can't have both.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But I'll say if it comes to the most physically challenging things, I was most tattered and broken after a year of finding myself doing that Boundless television show. It was testing myself to the ultimate lengths of what the human capacity can do, and also juggling really figuring out who I was as a person, and also juggling a relationship and juggling a business and all these kind of things. And I think I was doing too much all at once. And like, that was another really eye-opening lesson that I wasn't a superhero.
Right.
I couldn't do everything at once. I couldn't do the CrossFit Open. I couldn't do Boundless, try to run Spartan races, date a girl, and try to open a gym all at once. And I think a lot of people who like really originally get into CrossFit, and I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to this, like think they're like, man, I just started doing CrossFit. I want to open up the gym. I want to go to the CrossFit games, and I'm going to still go out and party and do X, Y, and Z. And I've met so many people like that through sport, and I'm like, good luck.
Yeah.
And you try to help them a little bit. So, you know, anybody who's listened to this, I hope that you understand that chase one dream, not five.
Man, that's serendipitous. Today I wrote in my journal, do less with more intent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude. I find myself often in that predicament where I've just got 50 projects going on or 50 different things going on at once. And I'm always feeling like I don't have time for any of them.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll admit, being an athlete, as I become more successful, more opportunities come out there. I just got an email, a couple days ago about a television show. I was doing the CrossFit Open while filming, going around, with all these CrossFit athletes. That's where I met Jacob. I'm preparing for my Spartan and Tough Mudder season, all these different kind of things. And it's so amazing, like the amount of opportunity you can have, but then you end up recognizing that you're only doing all of those things at 50%, 75%, 30%, whatever it might be. And it took me a second. Like, that's why I end up in these training camps. I'm in Park City, Utah right now. I've got zero friends. I've got nothing to do other than write food that I've eaten down in my food journal, right. Go to the gym three times a day, And like my highlight of my week was I went and watched an action, the new Avengers movie. And that was even dipping into my nap time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I really, certain times of year, will have to minimize those things down.
Dude, you're an absolute savage of a human being. This has been a great podcast. Tell me about the, tell everyone about the Tough Mudder X, because I think that race is something that all people in functional fitness need to hear about it. I want to do it myself.
It's really exciting. The world of CrossFit is an absolute brilliant expression of fitness and challenge. The world of obstacle course racing is another expression of fitness and challenge. And I think a lot of people always wonder who's the fittest athlete, who would be better at this and that. And Tough Mudder's created this really incredible course called Tough Mudder X, which is 1 mile of 10 obstacles and 10 functional fitness movements. And, it's a bracket based things where we had the two opens and now you could qualify for that of the world title. And we have some of the best CrossFitters coming. We got Jacob. We've got potentially Tommy coming. We have Sam Dancer, that kid Dakota Rager who killed the CrossFit Open this year. There's like a handful of these insane CrossFitters who I've never got to compete against before. And then you've got a ton of world champions from that of the OCR world. We've got all these American Ninja Warrior athletes coming. We have a couple of Olympians coming. So it's like this humongous melting pot of athletes coming together all for the goal of one competition. And it's an awesome opportunity because there wasn't necessarily a qualifier such as some of these guys got invitations, but I could never get an invitation to the CrossFit Games. So we will get to see how an Olympic gold medalist rower stacks up against an obstacle course racing athlete. That's and so cool. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And for me, I love running. But I love lifting weights, and the two of these things combined creates this incredible, like insane level of intensity where you see epic failure. It's like just like the pegboard event at the CrossFit Games a couple of years ago. Yeah. You were seeing people who had the physical capacity to do things that most people thought were impossible, all of a sudden like completely falling down at something that seems so simple.
Right.
And you get to really watch that here. So there's a lot of really cool intensity, lead switching, things like that. So on June 9th, the world title will be happening with 50 female athletes, 50 male athletes on CBS. So everyone will get to watch it. And I'm excited. If you're in the area, you guys can come watch as well.
So cool, man. And you're on Instagram at Hunt the Sheriff.
Yeah, look at you. You've been doing your research.
And where else can people keep up with you, brother?
In reality, a website or anything? No, I don't do the website thing. It's just too much for people to look after. Yep. I think the best way to find it, go to Hunt the Sheriff on Instagram. You can find out what I'm doing right now.
It's pics.
Yeah, dude, just big buff dudes. I actually had my butt cheeks out in the last one. It's pretty
spicy. Nice.
Yeah, no big deal. No big deal. Yeah, but if you want to keep along with it, listen to this podcast. You'll get to hear more of me. I'm searched sometime soon. And check it out on Instagram, man. And keep on following what we're doing in obstacle course racing. Hopefully, I'll be in the CrossFit world soon.
Awesome, bro. Thank you so much for your time. This is great.
Awesome, dude.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Your journey towards better fitness continues. Head over to brutestrengthtraining.com to connect with Michael and his guests. Access links and resources mentioned in this episode, as well as bonus content exclusive to podcast listeners. That's brutestrengthtraining.com.